This show was brought to you by Ouch My Ego. OuchMyEgo.com.
Hey there, John.
How's it going, Andrew?
It's going all right. In fact, I'm losing my mind a bit.
Well, in all honesty, I should probably have said this more like, hi, Andrew.
Why?
Why did you make me do this?
Oh, I see. You too have lost a bit of your mind. Due to what we just experienced. Which, well, what did we just watch?
We watched Motivational Growth.
His name was Kent. He was my television set. He died somewhere around week 67. I'd always thought I'd be the first to go.
I haven't left this apartment in going on 16 months now.
Good morning, sunshine.
My name's Ian.
Oh, the mold knows, Jack. The mold knows. It goes like this, Jack. Right now, you're a goldfish in an 8-ounce glass. You got nowhere to go and you don't even know it. You're stuck. You're clutched. And the world is just gonna keep getting smaller for you unless you kick and scream and claw your way out of it. The mold is life. There's a whole world of dandies and fantastics waiting for you to pull up, hop out, and dance your dance for them. And the mold wants you to live. The mold's got plans for you, kid. Jack, are you ready to begin?
And when we first learned of this movie, I was perusing the free movies on Vudu, and there's this pink and purplish-bluish little poster of a guy looking at a bunch of little TV squares, and I'm like, what is that? So, oh, it's got a trailer. So I watched it, and then I was like, what even is this? Because it didn't tell you anything about what was happening in the movie. It just showed strange elements, and it did not explain, in a traditional trailer sense, what's happening, which is the best trailer, by the way. What do you think?
I did not see the trailer to this. You kind of told me to go into it completely blind.
Right.
I don't think you had even seen the film at...
No.
At that point.
Nope. I literally just watched this.
This is extremely fresh in my mind. I just finished watching this.
Right.
As well. So I went into this and I decided I'm not even going to look at the description next to it.
Oh.
I am going 100% blind.
Oh.
Every single movie that we've discussed, I have seen something about or have had some sort of knowledge about.
All right.
In the past.
Good. Now, my question my question was really about trailers. What do you think about trailers in a general sense? Like, do you think showing a lot of the story elements is good, or do you think just kind of like a quick blip version of it where it doesn't show you any context but shows you cool stuff? What do you like most?
I kind of sit in the middle of that. I don't want a trailer to spell out every single thing about a film, even if it doesn't seem like it. Like, actually, the trailer for The Grey. After seeing that film and you watch the trailer for that, you are shocked at what is actually in the trailer that they spoiled.
But you had no idea that, like, it spoiled it?
But you had no idea. And then you go, my God, they gave away so much of that film in that trailer. And even if you have that, there's no context to it. All of a sudden, you're anticipating these things that don't happen until, like, the last third of the film. So anything that kind of spoils... Marvel trailers and things like that are very good at just telling you everything that you are going to see in the film. And, you know, I don't necessarily like that.
Right.
But at the same time, I don't like completely nonsensical trailers too.
Right.
I want somewhere in the middle, or at least if it's going to be a trailer, I want it to be a tone piece. I think one of the best trailers of all time is for the remake of The Haunting. That creepy little, you know, it's like describing this house. It's like, these are its eyes.
Okay.
This is its bones and things like that. And it tells you nothing other than you're going to see a haunted house movie. And it's a terrible movie, but that trailer...
Ah, I was hoping you got there amazing. That it was a terrible movie, because it is. But you like the trailer.
Yes.
That's a
but
good,
I think that trailer
that's
is
a, good teaser
is a really bit of marketing.
Teasers are always the ones that seem to be the ones that you should probably watch, and then not the actual trailers. Maybe a TV spot, which would be like 30 seconds or 15 seconds long. Those are also kind of okay. But actual trailers, they're not helpful because they give way too much away. Speaking of, let's say, Baby Driver. There's a joke in the trailer, and I laughed every single time I saw it in the trailer because it's amazing. It's so good. But when I'm watching Baby Driver, the joke comes along and I already know it. It just took the wind out of it. Even though it's an amazing joke, it's the same joke, it's the same setup, it's the same everything. It's just American marketing. Oh, yeah.
Escape from LA's trailer has that. The one genuine laugh in the film is in the trailer.
Yeah.
I remember seeing the trailer in theaters and that joke killed.
Right.
Saw the film. That joke just, you know, you can hear the crickets.
Uh-huh. Because it's already been said and done. And you're like, okay, new material, please. Except it's perfect in the film, regardless. It's weird how things are like that. But this trailer that I saw didn't help me. Except it just showed me, you might like the visuals. You definitely like the weirdness. But how sincere is this weirdness going to be? Is it going to be like the Greasy Strangler or Tim and Eric? Because that's the kind of weirdness that I can't abide by, because it's intentional for off-putting reasons. It's intending to bother you. It's not sincere in that it challenges you, but it usually just says, we're gross. Ha ha ha, isn't gross funny? Isn't awkward and gross funny? Ha ha, and it's not. It really isn't. So, having said that, John, what the heck is motivational growth?
Essentially, it's a bizarre film. I'm trying to think of how I'm going to lay it out. You've got this guy who hasn't left his apartment for 16 months. Well, he changes it. He says first 6 months, and then he says 16.
Yeah, and 16 is the one that he repeats. So
I remember hearing the two
okay.
times.
Well, he says 6 months when his television breaks, and 16 months in total. And he said 16 months to two different people, I think.
Okay. He's shut himself off from the world. Maybe he's agoraphobic.
He's 30-something. Yeah, he's like 32 or so.
It's hard to tell if he actually has a real problem or if he's just a loser. You know, he really can't discern this.
Right.
And one day, he just, you know, after his TV breaks, he, you know, he takes that really well by trying to kill himself.
And how does he do this?
He's making chlorine gas in his bathtub and hopefully gonna choke on it. Instead, he realizes he's got a vent open, so he tries to seal that. Trips, falls, bangs his head.
Wakes up and he sees what? What the heck is...
It's a big thing of mold, and it's talking to him.
Okay, so, first thing, chlorine gas.
If you mix two parts common household bleach and one part sulfuric acid, you get chlorine gas. If sulfuric acid isn't immediately available, you can probably make do with any common ammonia-based glass cleaner. I think. Let's find out.
So, Elby, my wife, having just moved into the house, she just told me this, and I didn't realize this. I thought it was just Tilex, but she was using Tilex in the shower stall, which was actually left dirty by the previous owners, those jerks, and she was cleaning it, but then she also used some Windex or something like that on some other part, and being in such close proximity... She created a concoction that was similar to chlorine gas. And I didn't know that much. I thought it was just the Tilex, but she told me that it was a combination of the two on accident. And I was like, oh, that's why it was just the worst day ever. It's pretty bad, dude.
Oh, man. Yeah, I could imagine.
Yeah, it was in the back of the house, so we could vent it. But yeah, it was pretty bad. Close the door, open the window. Yeah. So that's my personal experience with homemade chlorine gas. And... he wakes up and there's a talking mold voiced by
Jeffrey Combs.
Now, have you ever seen the movie Brain Damage?
Off the top of my head, I don't believe so.
Kind of funny that you say off the top of your head where your brain is.
I know I've seen the box art for it, but I don't think I've actually ever seen the film.
So Brain Damage deals with a strange little alien entity that can talk, and it's kind of...
Oh, yes. Yes, I have seen that. Yes, I have seen it.
Eyes and a mouth, and it's sometimes phallic, sometimes worm-like, and it gets inside the guy's head and pops out every so often and tells him to do stuff. And that's voiced by the horror host... Zachary, who's a legend.
Yeah,
but
yeah, come to Jeffrey Combs. I definitely have seen it then.
So Jeffrey Combs starts talking as the mold, whose dialogue is amazing.
Good morning, sunshine. Welcome back to the land of the living. You okay, buckaroo? You still in orbit? Hey, you listening to me, nosebleed?
Just the script for at least Jeffrey Combs. Other characters, too. It's very unique dialogue, and I love how he presents it. Elby said it reminded her of Adam West, like an older Adam West.
Yeah, I could hear that. Kind of got a little bit of a drawl going with it. Kind of seems like he's voicing someone from the 50s, almost. This entire film has this bizarre retro vibe to it. to it.
Yeah.
In like a mishmash of eras, all kind of packed into this thing.
So the television that breaks is an old 1964 television called the Commodore. It's something that's made up for the movie, I'm sure. But it's this hand-me-down television that he's had for generations. He's last in line for it, and it just breaks.
Yeah, just the CRTs in it are just fried and stuff.
Yeah, it's this kind that has the cabinet around it. The speakers are built into the sides of it. It's very vintage-style TV. And the decor in the house, you can't really tell because this house is in shambles when you first see it. His apartment.
Well, they will have to address this only because it made me stop and appreciate stuff. There is a little bit of decor on his walls. You can't really tell most of it. One of them is from the 2009 KMFDM Angel Spit tour that I saw. I sat there and went, wait, he has a KMFDM. I know that poster and I know that tour.
Why?
I was at
one
of those shows.
Why is this important to you, John?
Because I like the band. I know this. This has got me interested again.
I'm sorry, that's the most subtle version of I like the band I've ever heard. You love the band, John.
Yes.
Admit it. Like isn't even part of it. You love
KMFDM. I've seen them on tour for the last 15 years, with the exception of one tour that I missed because they didn't visit Vegas.
Is that like one a year?
Almost. They were almost on tour once a year, then they kind of spread out at the end of that. But
so this little bit was a little present to you.
Yes, it was.
From the universe.
I will say, I don't understand why it's part of the set dressing, other than whoever was dressing the set probably had that lying around and decided to stick it up on their wall. Because one, he definitely doesn't seem like he goes out at all.
Right, well, he doesn't go out. He even admits as much.
That front door and I have a bit of a thing, in so much as I've pretty much stayed away from it unless there was pizza on the other side.
Yeah.
So he doesn't leave his house. He looks disgusting. He has a beard. He has a pimple on his chin that's poking out from the beard. He's got sunken in eyes. His hair is disheveled. He's wearing a ratty old t-shirt that's stained and disgusting. He has bed sores. He has a big old bruise on the side of his leg. He's wearing tidy whities that are no longer white.
Yeah, he is disgusting. His apartment is disgusting.
And as a lot of these movies that we talk about, not all of them, not exclusively, but a lot of them have to do with mental illness. Mental health, anyway. And this one is no exception. This one really is about a guy's mental health and his perceived self-worth, which he obviously thinks he has none, because he would much rather kill himself than have to deal with one of the only motivating things in his life, which is taking a dump.
We think a little differently when it comes to bowel movements because they are an expression of life. And life is hateful. Life is death. And pain.
Yeah, it's essentially the highlight of his day.
And it's not even a highlight. He loathes it. He hates that that's the one thing that gets him out of bed.
Yeah, and he just...
But it's a necessity. Now, we know this because he stops and he breaks the fourth wall and starts talking to us, the audience.
Yeah, he has this stream of consciousness. Well, everyone kind of has this stream of consciousness way of speaking. But his, in particular, is just almost unconnected thoughts that just kind of ramble into each other. Like when he's going to the bathroom and he's talking about that he has to do this, and he's talking about kittens.
You know kittens? Kittens are killers, man. They are killing machines.
You know, they're not playing with you. They're trained to kill something. And then back to, look at the dump I just took, essentially.
Yeah, so it's a very pessimistic perspective he has at the beginning. But after he meets the mold, which is in the corner next to his sink on the floor, which is actually a fantastic scene when he falls.
Yeah.
When he replays the memory of having fallen, it's done in such a very visually interesting way that in a major special effects laden blockbuster type film, you'd have bullet time doing it.
And they essentially probably, I don't know exactly how they did it. I can guess a few things. I'm just going, yeah, they just suspended him, you know, just had a couple strings hanging from the wall and just, he's hanging there in, you know, mid air at one point.
Yeah, in various different angles. Now, like I said, we would probably do it with bullet time if it was a major film, or even make a CG mock of him. They didn't do that here, which it's sort of Buffalo 66. Remember when they did the bullet time?
Yeah.
Except it wasn't bullet time, it was just everybody holding a pose and the camera moving around him.
Yeah.
It reminded me of that, but this is much more complicated because he's hanging in the air. So he wakes up, and I want to say Aylmer, because that's what happens in brain damage. The Aylmer is the name of the alien thing, and it really reminds me of the same kind of relationship where the mold, he calls himself the mold, begins to give instruction to our guy who doesn't have a name until much later.
Yeah, he finally introduces himself. Oh, I think it's actually when he's talking to the mold.
Yeah.
I think that's when he finally introduces himself.
The mold calls him Jack.
Come here, Jack.
My name is Ian.
The mold knows Jack.
Come here.
I don't think you do know, because you keep calling me Jack.
Oh, no, no, I am wrong. He introduces himself to us, because he's getting ready to commit suicide, actually? And then he goes, I'm Ian, by the way.
Oh, right. That's when he's fixing the vent, and then he falls, and then he talks to the mold, and the mold insists to call him Jack, and he goes, the mold knows. Jeffrey Combs' voice is so amazing in this.
He is by far my favorite thing in the film, aside from that poster.
I have a smattering of things I'm very fond of in this film. We're going to get to them. The whole thing, though, is motivational growth. Is the mold gives him advice on how to better his life.
Well, it basically encourages him that if he wants to... One of the few things that he does in his life is he'll get up off the couch and he'll look out his peephole at this neighbor girl named Leia who walks by every day at a certain time. That's...
Right.
That's, like, the only other thing that gets him moving is this, but...
Well, that actually happened... During the movie, after he met the mold, right? The landlord, Box the Ox, comes in. He wants his money. This is one of the characters that I really like his performance. It's this big galoot type of guy. But the way he presents his lines is very unique as well.
They used to call me Box the Ox. Box because I was a fighter, and Ox on account of me being naturally large.
It's the same writer, obviously, but it's a unique character. So this guy does not suffer from Kevin Smithitis.
Actually, I would disagree. I think he does. All the characters sound all the characters sound the same because they all have that. Everyone has that stream of consciousness type of delivery. All their lines are just kind of weird.
Well, yeah,
Box is a little more focused because, you know, like his first monologue. Because every time Ian tries to say, like, "Shut up."
You ever been to a prison follower?
I've never.
Shut up.
And then he keeps going on about this one particular thing, but it's just...
Well, what I'm talking about is the
rambles for no apparent reason. You know, it ends up turning into a threat of, I will essentially break your legs if you don't pay me, eventually.
But the thing I'm really talking about is the choice of words and the idiosyncratic delivery thereof. The writer obviously writes sort of a cool type daddy-o in a weird way for Jeffrey Combs.
The mole's about two shakes from totally frosted right now.
And a unique kind of machismo for Box.
There are plenty of things I don't much like to hear. That you can give me rent is something I like to hear.
Yeah, I can understand.
Shut up.
Like I said, he's a big galoot. And looking at him, you wouldn't expect that guy to be able to deliver the lines in the kind of rhythm and way. Nobody's imitating anybody else's acting in this movie. So it's not like Jeffrey Combs coached Box. Well, maybe he did, but I don't know. But it doesn't seem like that, you know? Or vice versa.
No, you're right. They are characters.
This is what I mean by Kevin Smithitis. All of the actors sound like Kevin Smith. These actors all present the lines written by somebody else in a unique way.
But all the actual dialogue is just kind of rambling.
But I don't think that they have common phrases.
Until they finally get...
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
They don't have common phrases. I'm thinking about myself here because I am a person who speaks like nobody else, I think. You might not pick it up, but I live with me. And I know exactly how oddly I speak. Certain things come out of me. I want to say, go to the refrigerator and get the milk. And that's concise in itself, but I might want to get there faster. So I say, cold thing, milk, or something. That's a bad example, but I tend to do this weird verbal shorthand that is comfortable for me, but other people are like, that's weird, dude. So I pick things up like that when other characters do that, and that seems to be how he wrote the unique weird characters in this. Because there's some normal characters as well.
I'll even disagree on that. I think you're right. There is one normal character.
No, two there is really. One. I mean, if you're considering Leia is kind of normal. She's kind of.
I don't. She is moving way too fast
for the
eye stalker that she is.
Normal being the way that she speaks and the delivery of lines normal. She's not manic,
I don't know,
pixie,
dude, that
quirky
be,
girl
that...
type turned up. She's not Kimmy from Twin Peaks, you know?
Yeah, well, it's that bee monologue that she has that's just...
You have a queen bee, and a drone bee, and a billion million worker bees. The drone bee is an outcast. The worker bees will try to kill him if he gets too close to the hive.
Suck.
Total suck. That is, of course, unless there's a new queen. A queen that has to mate.
Go on.
Queen bee flies out of her hive, the one time she ever leaves the comfort of her daily routine, like ever, and flies to the drone who's been waiting for her. Unsure at first, they fly around one another, showing off, until they get too close.
What happens then?
They become irresistibly attracted to one another. They go wild with passion to show their love for one another, They dance.
Where are you? What the? Why? Ah!
Okay.
Kind of reaction to things going.
You're a funny dude. You like all these weird things, but when you're confronted with truly weird things, I'm talking about your musical taste. It's like in film, you're like, no! I can handle it with my music, but now!
The word I glom onto, like, I was thinking about this while I was watching it.
Okay.
A lot of the dialogue first made me think of David Lynch.
Oh, hmm.
Especially David Lynch's character in Twin Peaks.
Okay.
Is very much like almost every single character, kind of how he just kind of will say things constantly, and then you have to kind of, in your head, start picking apart what he said. Oh, okay, I'm, you know, starting to follow his straight
sure,
of
thought. Sure, yeah,
I'm
yeah.
Mostly in the main TV series, not the new one.
In how Box, especially, I get what you're saying. We're not thinking superficially now. We're actually thinking type of way they speak.
Yeah.
So Box is really fast, and he keeps going and going and going, but he eventually has a point, but you have to pay attention.
Yeah, there's very much a David Lynchian way that all these people are talking. Then pretty much everything else about this film is straight out of Cronenberg, or maybe like Yuzna and, you know, and the...
Hannon Lauder, the guy who did Basket Case and Brain Damage.
Yeah, it's like things like that, because there's a lot of just... Well, actually, I would say with Cronenberg, definitely the weird sexual mushroom stuff.
Was it sexual?
Well, the nipple, and they made it...
The mold is giving him instruction, and at one point he pops out a mushroom, which, I mean, come on, because... The
well,
vernacular,
also,
mushroom tip, and all that stuff.
Well, not even that. It's even
consider
not just the mold, but I'm even talking about the first TV repair guy. The guy who is obsessed with the plasma thing, and him
sure
more or less dry humping the box and licking it, and I got...
No. I'm going to say no to the dry humping. Caressing, yes. There's no thrusting, there's nothing
like
that.
He was all on that box.
He was on it.
He was getting aroused.
He wasn't.
By this old TV.
No, like, I don't want to misrepresent this, because it's not trash humpers. There's no pelvic thrusting, but there is absolute groping and caressing and licking. That's true. But, like, once you get into humping territory, people don't want to see that necessarily,
okay,
if they know about it.
But,
you know?
Again, there's this weird sexual thing with this guy in the TV.
Well, okay, let's get to that.
For no reason. Yeah. And he's...
That guy comes in after Box leaves.
Yeah, almost immediately, too.
Just immediately, because he puts his foot in the door. And that guy has a very unique way of delivering lines as well.
Your set's dead, pal.
You licked my TV.
Tubes fried.
You licked Kent.
You're not going to find a replacement for this old thing.
With your tongue.
This is what I mean by everybody's a separate character as opposed to being the voice of the writer. But he's a very unique guy, and he delivers his lines very strangely, and he's kind of... The second time it reminded me of, like, an evil Ernest.
Okay.
He's got a TV repairman hat on, and he's got this very distinct kind of facial features. It's not as elongated as Jim Varney, but the nose is similar.
Yeah, I guess I can see what you mean.
But his lines aren't delivered like, know what I mean? Know what I mean, Byrne?
No.
He's not like that, but and he's not as quick, but he's very deliberate and interestingly speaking the lines. And I find that to be very interesting. And then, yeah, he molests the TV, and he keeps on talking about plasma TVs, and Ian flips out and tries to get him to leave and then pukes on his face.
Really should consider getting a plasma.
Yeah, and the puke is like acid or something, and
it's green. It's dark green, right? And he
yeah.
has no idea what's going on. And this guy's performance is also amazing, where he flips out. He's got the stuff on his face, and he's on the ground, and he's flipping around. And it reminded me of, like, if they were to do that as a special effect, they would have an animatronic body that has hydraulic pumps up to it, and they would just be wiggling around those hydraulic pumps, pressing the buttons to make it just flip out, like
yeah.
teeter from side to side rather rapidly. And this is a human being doing this without a special effect. And then he gets up and runs out, screaming.
Yeah, and then that's where he goes back to the mold, and he gets the mushroom.
Right, so now this mushroom...
And eats it.
I did think, like you, because phallus is also kind of like mushroom. mushroom-shaped sometimes, they say. I haven't seen all of them, but, you know, they say mushroom tip and all that stuff. And so I did go there, but he only breaks the top off of the mushroom and eats it and then passes out.
Yeah, he finds himself inside the TV, and he's wandering through different TV channels or programs or something.
Now, these shows on TV, this is the part of the movie that I hate.
And they do that twice, and they're both annoying.
They're the worst actors in the film.
And I think that is deliberate.
The alien cop show, I think part of it's deliberate. Yeah. But the partner of the alien cop, I think he's actually just a bad actor.
Well, you see, probably think you're standing here, butt naked, with Officer Zygor, alien cop, and his trusty sidekick, Barnard Starr, right?
I think they were using that to maybe what you're saying to their end, but I think he's just a bad actor. He bothered me every time I saw this. Twice, you know. But none of that, it all seems to be things that the mold has been telling him, but spoken through all these characters. Did you pick that up?
Yeah, well, it happens a couple of times where when the TV is on, at some points there'll be conversations, especially after he gets the TV actually fixed. The TV talks to him at one point.
Now get up off your tush, because
you don't belong here. You got stuck here on your way someplace else. And man, you need to find it someplace.
You need to keep listening to me. It's the only way you're gonna work this out. I've been here for you. It's because you need.
Most of these times it's slightly vague.
Now, when Box came in, he noticed the time that this girl walked out of her apartment door.
Yeah.
He notices this girl and he marks it down, 10:16, and then he sets his alarm every day for that. And that's where that part of the motivation comes from, him wanting to see her. So he peeps out of his door peephole every day at that time, and she picks up on this.
She eventually does notice that he's eye-stalking her.
Hi, my name is Leia. I just think you should know that if you're going to be door-stalking me.
I wasn't.
Listen, I just wanted you to know where I stand.
It's just that
I just thought it would be meaningful for you to have a name to go with the face. Also, I wanted a face to go with the odd guy's eyeball.
I can't.
Hey, I need to get back to my routine. You have a great day. You'll see me tomorrow, okay?
Okay.
I watch this twice and she says, see ya, oddball, or see ya, eyeball. Can't tell which one it is.
Later, oddball.
That's the thing. I did have subtitles on the film, and I did notice they didn't match.
Oh, really?
Necessarily what was being said. I didn't write down any examples, so sorry, but there was a couple of times where I did notice that, especially it's her, more than anything else, she says something, but the subtitle was different.
Ah, that's unique and interesting. That usually only happens with Asian films or bootlegs. Okay, well, she's actually interested in him a little bit. He's a conundrum to her, so she wants to figure him out. This is where you're like, she's not a normal character. And I agree, she's not. I just mean she's normal enough in that she's a conventionally pretty girl who delivers her lines in not a quirky manner.
Yeah, because the only other female character is that grocery delivery person, Vanessa.
And I don't think she's actually that strong. I find her to be rather annoying.
I hated her. Extremely bitchy when we first meet her.
What is all this stuff?
Your groceries. Are you high?
And then still kind of bitchy when she comes back.
But when she does come back, everything's cool in the house. Everything has been changed.
Yeah.
There was a montage in between then and now where Ian shaved, popped his pimple, cleaned up the house.
Yeah, yeah, he also notices that he might be dead on the ground, too.
Yeah, that's a very startling thing. It flickers in and out digitally, this gooey pile of bones and clothes. And he assumes that it's him. Maybe it is, but it keeps on flickering in and out as if it's on an old CRT tube television.
Yeah. And again, there's another repair guy who comes in before Vanessa returns.
Now that guy is cool.
Yeah, he's the normal character in this film.
Right.
And he comes in, he fixes it, and he's just a nice dude.
Yeah, he's a nice guy, and I like how he's like,
well, I don't know about all that, Mr. Fulivar, but what I do know about is televisions.
I like that line. Because he's like,
you have 20 seconds to blow my mind. You're a bit late to the party. There have been some tough acts.
Well, if you don't mind.
Not at all. Sprout a second head. Punch me in the gut.
I was anticipating, as he was unscrewing the back of the TV, I'm anticipating he opens it up and, like, guts or something fall out.
Yeah, Cronenberg things.
You know, yeah, I'm waiting for something gross to happen, and nope.
It's just this
little,
it's this little bit that he pulls out that seems to have some lime green looking foam on it or something.
Yeah, he just pulls out one of the tubes and it's got apparently a mold infestation.
Yeah. So he repairs it. Everything's fine, except here's where the mold gets a bit pissed.
My name is Ian.
The mold knows, Jack. The mold knows.
Kent was my friend, you know. You killed him.
He cost you money. He kept you dormant. He locked you to the couch and he sold you out for advertising dollars. He pulled you into the world of the unreal. Mold gave you something, made something of you. What did that squawk box ever actually do for you, really?
But the thing is, all of the TV shows that he's watching, there's some kids commercial about some...
It's like a video game genie. Yeah, it's like a video game related thing.
Thumb bad pads, silicone thumb stuff so that you're...
Like, I'm guessing it's silicone grips for your controller.
Bad pads. Silicone video gamer thumb protection pads. Get back in the game!
But I don't know why there'd be an entire little ad devoted to it. Doesn't make any sense.
Well, there's that. There's a space cop show.
Crashed to Earth while chasing a terrible alien outlaw from deep space. Now he's a cop with a badge and a gun.
There's...
Yeah, there's another cop show that's kind of Miami Vice-y.
Sort of. But they're not dressed like Miami Vice.
Yeah. There's two different yoga programs.
Yeah. There's one workout aerobics program.
You just run and run.
Yeah. And the other is yoga.
It's inner city yoga or something.
It's called Deaf Yoga and it's going to rock your world.
Yeah.
Maybe there's another thing somewhere.
Super Mega Shark Extreme!
I don't even like tomatoes.
But none of these look like legitimate television shows. They look like cable access
at
best.
Oh, no, not at all.
And that's my problem with it.
Well, it makes sense if that's the only thing that he can receive on his TV anyway.
I suppose so. Amateur television show channel. But he keeps changing channels.
Yeah.
So it's the entire... It's the only channels that are available are all these cable access channels.
But yeah, so... But after the TV guy leaves, that's when Vanessa shows up with the rest of his grocery delivery. And since he's not going to pay her tip, she decides that she's just going to stay until he does. And then the mold attacks.
Right. So during that montage where he's getting everything ready, he's also drilling holes into the wall. About an inch hole into the wall.
Yeah, about
and
there,
he has no idea. We don't know. He just does it because the mold tells him to. But what the mold does is he grows plants somehow through those holes. They're not quite mold, but they shoot spores and darts.
Yeah, it's like a dart of some kind.
And this shoots her in the neck, and then that sends him into a freak out, and he... This is another TV montage.
Yeah, that's where he finds the nipple-like one, which kind of looks like a pumpkin almost, on the wall.
It's a gourd, yeah. That's all it is a gourd on the wall.
But then he...
But the stem is rather nipply.
Now, lick it with your tongue.
Okay.
Yeah, got it. That's kind of... But then, here's the thing we didn't mention at all. It transitions to on television for just a second, and this is the coolest stuff that was ever on TV, is these animations.
These were 8-bit.
2D, 8-bit style animations, but instead of 8-bit style being clunky, it's still really illustrated. The art direction on these are amazing.
Yeah, they're like old computer graphics as opposed to like what you'd think of like a Nintendo, even a Super Nintendo.
Right, so like an Amiga.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that sequence just shows him sucking on a teat, on a boob, and then he thinks it's just a personal thing, and he looks up, and there's this robot head similar to Hajime Soriyama's 80s-style robot designs of sexy robot ladies. But it's just her head on a swivel sort of thing, and it swirls around this big cylinder, and there's boobs all over the place, and there's a bunch of different other cartoon characters also drinking from them. And the guy's like, what? Wait, what? And he stumbles back into another TV show.
Well, it's like, because I did notice this, where it's like, in the background, it almost looks like it's an entertainment for other people, because it's a weird, like, alien bar, almost. And you have people laughing at all these schmucks that are suckling at this teat, or teats.
Right. Yeah. Multiple teats. Yeah, I noticed that, too. But this animation stuff is really good, and they did it a couple times throughout the film, 3 times. They introduced the movie with an advertisement for a video game called Star Mazer. Have you ever heard of it?
No.
Well,
I was wondering if that was a real game or if that was just made up. Kind of figured that it was probably part of the world. in this film.
It is a game. The first thing is very much a game. Star Mazer, there's two games. One of them is a traditional side-scroller, like Galaga.
Yeah, kind of look like an R-type type game.
Yeah, that's the one I was thinking of, but I don't know video games, so I don't know what they're called. So, like, R-type, yeah. Exactly like R-type, except newer, different art direction and stuff. And this movie starts off with a cool 8-bit style chiptune sort of fanfare for Imago. I say Imago.
I'd probably say Imago.
In fact, the company that made it. And I was like, wait, this is really interesting. This is not what I expected this movie to start like at all. But anyway, so after he goes through that TV channel hallucinations.
Well, after that, he wakes and he's hacking the body, Vanessa's body up.
Right.
Then she comes over.
Leah. And she wants to hang out and get all flirty with him, which she successfully does. But then he pukes on her, like he pukes on the first TV guy.
Except it's not acid to her.
No. She's cool.
It's just
now, this,
gross.
I was like, this is the coolest girl in the world or the weirdest girl in the world because...
Oh, no, not you!
Calm down.
Please, no,
it's okay. It's okay. What have you been eating?
I don't know!
It's very funny, his performance. And then he gets her a change of clothes and she wants to flirt with him. And then you were talking about the bee scene.
Yeah, where it's just, she's very blatantly hitting on him, that she's down, you know, she's DTF, and...
down to which is, DTC, dude. DTC, down to cuddle.
No, I think it's a little bit more than cuddling that she has in mind.
DTMO, down to make out.
A little more than make out, I think.
DTFB, first base.
No, I think you're reading her as much of a too nice girl, and I think she's apparently not that nice of a girl.
DTSB? Okay, DTSB, DTOTS, DT second base, or DT over the shirt?
Probably third base, a little bit more. Home run.
I have no idea, because this movie never goes there.
No, yeah, it's because he is so interested in her, and when she came in, even telling the mold that, let me do this. Stop bugging me. Don't talk. And so as she's getting closer and closer to actually getting him to do something, the mold finally speaks up.
Because she says love, and the mold's like,
right, that's just about enough of that.
Yeah, and...
And the mold is real. Okay, let's put it this way. If she's real, if she's not part of a hallucination...
I'm 100% down to say everything in this film is a hallucination at this point.
You're thinking that his interaction with her is a hallucination?
Oh, yeah. I think everything that happens after he bumps his head is not real.
Well, what happens is she notices the mold, and the mold...
And then it kills her.
Somehow.
Yeah. Well, sucks her underneath the sink. Because earlier in the film, after he's got that stuff, he's like feeding the mold steak and growth formula. I think that's how it's growing into the...
Right.
Into the walls and stuff. He's been feeding it for however long.
So he freaks out and transitions back to him being disgusting?
Yeah. Ian tries to man up after all this because the woman that he loves is killed. You know, he's got this asshole of a mold berating him. So he tries to man up and...
I am not going to eat that.
That's you and the mold say that you're in a room with 26 doors in it, and each one of these doors has...
Shut up!
You do that again, Jack.
And what? Ian thinks you need to be dealt with.
Then
it turns him into something similar, but not as oddly healthy as the Jeffrey Combs mold. Now, describe what the mold looks like.
The mold, I mean, very obviously a puppet, but it's kind of, you can see features on it. It's got eyes, it's got a mouth. It can be articulated to actually look.
Like, it's got an overhanging brow. It doesn't really have eyes, it just has darkness under that brow, right?
But it's got features in a way that you can, it's humanized in a way.
Anthropomorphized.
Yeah.
And it does have a mouth. Everything's just dingy, disgusting, black, gray.
Yeah.
So after he's, turned into this mush dude, like the mold, but next to the toilet.
He wakes up and he's back to how everything was at the beginning of the film.
Disgusting.
Including his apartment.
Pimple on his chin, same clothes. Goes to his television. Television breaks again, right?
I think it does, yeah. Yeah, because it
starts
up. But
then here's a really strange thing. The alarm goes off and it's set to 10:16, and he remembers the girl. So he hops up, and then there's a quick succession of edits of him in various shirts and clothes, and his hair is gradually better.
Yeah, doing all the same stuff they did earlier on, the same kind of montage. montage of him looking at her through the peephole.
Now he opens a door and leaves to go talk to her.
Yeah.
And he introduces himself to her and she says, I know. But the camera pans back and goes into the bathroom and you see that same dead body that was in there before.
Yeah, it's got mold grown all over it and stuff.
And then that shows that it's actually on the television screen, backs out from the TV and closes. I don't understand the ending.
Well, other than I'm pretty certain that, because he even complains after he attempts suicide and bumps his head that he failed suicide. No, I'm pretty certain he did what he set out to do. He killed himself. Everything that we're seeing is just either this is a very haunted complex or it's like a Jacob's Ladder sort of last few minutes in his head before he actually completely dies. And he's just having
like
this,
an odd fantasy trying to make sense of it all.
Yeah, his brain is coming up with this whole weird storyline where, you know, yeah, he bumped his head. Like one of the last conscious things he saw before he completely went out was this thing of mold by his sink. And so now his brain is just throwing out this bizarre story of the mold is helping him get this girl.
Something that he could not have in life.
Yeah.
Well, not that he couldn't, but that he never attempted.
Yeah.
Because this is all about his self-worth.
And that's the thing, is it's hard because all this stuff happens after he bumps his head. So we don't know if he actually has, as I said, agoraphobia or something like that. But it's very hard to tell. How does he pay his rent? How does he do these things if he said that he's been locked up in this thing for 6/16 months? Becomes, well, then how is he paying for these groceries to come in? The pizza delivery guy, all this stuff. Where is this coming from? And the film has no answers whatsoever. It's just there.
In that sense, I would say it's kind of like a comic book. Where comic books have, but there's a certain kind of comic book, independent or underground type thing, where you read what's on the page and you just accept what's there. You don't question what's there. You just see it for what it is. That seems to be how this was written.
Yeah, it's designed to be whatever it is that you want it to be. If you want to take it as that he died like I did, then that's one way of taking it. Another could be that, yeah, he's just slightly crazy, but something happens and he goes out and he actually finally breaks a little bit into reality and actually does something with his life. Or he's a serial killer because he chops up the girl. He Box also gets killed at the end of the film. So
right.
Maybe he killed his landlord too.
Always with the darts and yeah. Stuff. Now, it's in a way that it's kind of a brightly lit film, even though everything that when it's dingy and gross, it's dingy and gross, but it's not off-putting. It's not shot in the shadows.
No, it's...
The movie doesn't hide the characters in...
Yeah, it's surprisingly bright for a film that is about disgusting mold and disgusting people.
Well, I would say two disgusting people, really.
Yeah.
Two and a half,
three,
maybe. Box
three.
Isn't that...
Yeah, because I was going to say Box. I was going to say the guy, mold. Yeah.
Well, first TV guy is pretty disgusting. Yeah. Ian is pretty disgusting.
Well, and actually, so is Vanessa in a way. She's kind of... Like, I mean, she's kind of hip.
I was meaning disgusting. Like, there's something disgusting about them. Vanessa's just a mean girl.
Well, she's mean. There's something... Like, there's a weird shot of her where she... I think it's in the second time. I don't think it's in the first time. I think it's in the second where they do a close-up of her tongue and her little tongue stud.
Oh, yeah. No, that's his first time.
Yeah, and it's just kind of like
she's going to be back. She has a tongue piercing.
Yeah, and there's something, like, I don't have an issue. I seriously don't have a problem with people who have tongue studs or anything like that, but there's something weird and gross about that shot.
About showing it. I mean, it's a piece of metal.
Again, it's close.
And a wet piece of flesh.
Yeah, just it's this close-up and just something about it, just aside from her attitude, it just really made me think she was a disgusting person.
Yeah, well, she reminded me of people that I did know when I worked at Blockbuster who were not cool, so I wasn't cool with that character as portrayed. But she's functional. She's still not one of the better actors in the film. But I do like the performances at large. I do appreciate. Now, this was made by Imagos Films, which is also a company that makes video games.
Okay, would you explain those little animated segments, I would guess?
Yeah. Now, the director is Don Thacker, who also heads up the studio Imagos Films and Imagos something or other. And the music here was made by Alex Maurer.
Name doesn't strike me, but in all honesty, I think he might want to stick to just doing video games if that's his calling, because the score here...
Oh, you didn't like it in this movie?
No. I like chiptune. There's quite a few chiptune groups tropes I like, this stuff was horrible. It did not.
I don't think
it did
so.
Not fit
I
the
think
film.
It was weird that it was in this movie.
Yeah, it did not.
But I don't think it was horrible.
It didn't fit the film. It just.
I would actually say some of it did fit the film, but as I'm watching the film, it had to grow on me.
There was nothing about it that I liked. Also, in as much as I said earlier, this is a weird mishmash of era type stuff, because we have this weird Amiga 8-bit stuff, but the music never fit even in this weird mishmash. Even when we had like the 8-bit music for the game and stuff like that was fine, because that's appropriate, but the film itself...
Now, my problem with the music being in this film was that there was no reference point for it, and I know that it's kind of dumb that we need that. It's not like when we watch any movie that has a conventional score, we have to walk by a window or see the guy's CD collection and see, oh, it's got classical music in there, or...
Well, technically, we do see his quote-unquote record collection, because he has a tape collection. Nothing that stands out from any real artist, but...
Sure, but my point is, here you don't see him playing a video game. You don't see a video game console that I recall.
No.
So there's no hint that this has any ties to video games.
Has any bearing, yeah.
Except for the music.
It would have been fine. I would have been happy if it was a synth score, something that's maybe a little solid in its sound. That would have been fine. It would have also fit tonally a little bit more, because it's in this strange way you would have, okay, we have a weird mashup of Lynch, Cronenberg, and Carpenter.
Right, but it didn't have that. It went...
And it would have felt a little bit more, I don't want to say complete.
Appropriate.
Probably a little more right for me.
Yeah.
Appropriate.
Now, interestingly enough, this movie is hard to come by, even though it was on Vudu. There doesn't seem to be a lot of press for it, and I think the reason why is because the distribution rights, I think, happened more recently.
Yeah, I think on Vudu it says 2015.
Yeah, see, right. it was made in 13. Now, there's a fallout between Alex Maurer and John Thacker. In fact, the entire company, there's a fallout between the two. And that's a big controversial thing that's happening as we speak. I didn't know this because I was just looking up the score. Alex was hired to be part of Imagos, and they worked on this film together, and from this film they worked on other projects like the video game Star Mazer, and Alex spearheaded the soundtrack and was given more and more and more responsibilities regarding the music and part of even being a founder of Imagos. And all those responsibilities weighed on her mind, body, soul, something, and she broke. And it's a war against everyone now. Like, you can look at her tweets, and it's just she doesn't want anybody to be nice to her.
Wow.
She wants monetary recompense for things that she says that she's owed, but she's not owed that. She's trying to take them to court, and the game company is trying to do right by her, trying to get her help, because she's actually a frazzled person. And I find this really interesting, because this movie is about that. A frazzled person, a person who is at their wit's end, and so is the person who did the score for this movie. Now, it's a very analogous and interesting art imitating life imitating art situation.
Yeah, especially now hearing that, I can kind of hear that. It's chiptune, I don't think it fits, but that's just terrible.
Yeah, it's just... not a secret, it's out there, there's a lot of information about it. Imagos versus Alex Maurer, or vice versa. It's really vice versa. Imagos is not trying to be bad, from what I have understood. So, man, bring down this episode.
Yeah, thank you for making me feel bad.
No, okay, jerk. Back to the movie, though. What do you think? Would you recommend this movie?
I wouldn't.
No!
However, I definitely can see that this film would have an audience. I can't disparage anything like that. And I would sit there and go, again, if you like, I'm a broken record on this, but Lynch and Cronenberg, give it a spin. It won't hurt you.
No.
As of right now, it's free on Vudu.
Yeah, it's not even as much of a conundrum as any of their works. But it's like you said, Lynch, Cronenberg, by way of Hannon Lauder. That's what I think.
There's definitely reference. It definitely feels like it. And I personally like Jeffrey Combs. I think he is amazing in this. His voice work, anyway.
Yeah.
Everything else, I'm just kind of,
That was method acting, actually. He is the mold. That's not a puppet.
That was actually him underneath all that plastic.
He's not even painted. He willed himself. He's that much of a method actor. He willed himself into being a mold-like blobby creature. I'm lying. I make a joke.
You make with the humors.
Make with the human jokes. So, this is a film that is very much what I would used to bring to you guys back in the day. This type of film.
This is true. I was even thinking about the weirdness of this. The other film that you would have brought to us that is like this is that film Rubber.
Uh-huh, yeah.
Where it's like completely bonkers, insane nonsense.
Yep, hey guys.
And this
I've got
is
this movie. I don't want to tell you about it. Just watch it. And then you'd be like, what are you? Why are you making us? What? Okay, let's keep watching.
Yes. And again, that's kind of my reaction. It's like, why did you do this to me?
Oh, John, you and your conventional storytelling techniques. This is why you're co-host here, though.
Because I'm willing to subject myself to it, yes.
And you're like just so comfortably conventional in your tastes as far as like what you really enjoy and want. And I'm just trying to Lauren Reed you a little bit, how he would with music with me. I'm doing that with movies.
Yeah.
So he would always be like, you're too power pop. Let's make you listen to something completely opposite to that.
They'll challenge your little mind like these films challenge my little mind.
Yeah, exactly. So I say, yeah, definitely, because this is exactly the type of movie that I would bring to everybody and I have. But John, you say no?
I say no, but like I said, if you like these sorts of things,
it's always
give it
that way.
Give it a spin.
If you're a weirdo, go ahead.
No, yeah, it's free. It's on Vudu right now, free. So
yeah.
It can't hurt you.
Yeah, can't. Well, on that note, I bid you all adieu.
Later, everybody. Where are you? What the? Why? Ah!